Welcome to our program. I'm Richard Dugan, and I thank you very much for joining us. Today, we're going to take a look at turning your life into your most successful business venture. And we're going to take a look at a marketing plan for life with my guest, Robert Michael Fried. And he will be talking about 12 essential business principles to create meaning, happiness, and true success. Stay with us.
Walk with me, talk.
And it's good to have you with us, Robert Fried, to join us in talking about, of course, your book, Marketing Plan for Life. And first of all, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, Richard.
And let's talk a little bit about this. Now, your book goes through 12 essential business principles, as I mentioned, to creating to create meaning, happiness, and true success. And, of course, a lot of folks are finding that kind of difficult these days to kind of listen to and see what's going on in their areas and in the country and around the world, and yet try to stay optimistic and look for ways to improve their lives. And now, is this exclusively for the purposes of a business, or is this also just used in general for one's life improvement?
Well, I would say it's life improvement. I use business to, a lot of people spend 90% of their time on their career, and so I use business to ease them into their life, but it's also for people who are at a crossroads. And I think after years, Richard, of mainly focusing on our careers, we tend to lose focus on what really matters most in our personal lives. And in fact, some of us downright confuse having a good career with having a good life. But here's the irony. I found that the same strategies and principles that we use to steer companies in the right direction or a career in the right direction to make money could be reapplied to help steer us in the right direction as individuals to also make meaning, hence the book title, A Marketing Plan for Life.
It's something that obviously more and more people are wanting to do in their lives, to make their lives better. I know that a lot of people are looking at it, especially in terms of they want to, let's say, they have a very specific goal, let's say, of increasing their income, just because things are tight here and there. Is this a plan that can help them do that, or is that more of a side benefit of this process?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. I think to be truly happy, you have to make money and meaning. But I think it's the way we define success in these modern times that concerns me, because I think success, Richard, and monetary achievement have always been an important part of the American way of life. But now in these turbulent times, I think we need to take a step back, if you will, and wonder if we haven't defined success far too narrowly for far too long. Because even in business circles, it's no longer just about making money. It's also about making meaning. It's about core values and honing in on what really matters most. I came across this great quote by Ralph Waldo Emerson, who said, "To know even one life has breathed easier because you have lived, this is to have true success."
In the 12 steps that we could run through, and actually this book it's a combination read, but it also is a workbook of sorts. And that's a common way of setting this up so that people have something to do in that sense, something to put together?
Well, what's common about it is that there's an executive summary at the end of each chapter, and you have to answer some tough questions. What's uncommon about them is that the questions are tough because they have to do with you. And, you know, it's easy to answer questions about somebody else or your company, but when it comes down to you as an individual, it becomes tougher. So, you know, one of the first points in the book is defining the business you should be in. That's what a company has to do when it starts with its marketing plan. That's a company's raison d'etre, or reason for being, if you will. But the personal restatement of that is to define who you are, Richard, or more importantly, redefine who you'd like to be.
Mm-hmm.
Closing the disparity or gap, if you will, between who you are and who you dream of becoming. But here's the problem. There's this research study by a Dr. William Morton, and he asked 3,000 respondents what their true purpose in life was, and a whopping 94% said they had absolutely no idea what their true purpose in life is, and I'll tell you what unhappiness is, Richard. Unhappiness is not knowing what you want and killing yourself to get it.
Hmm. How does one go about the process of finding out what their purpose is?
Well,
and that's a big question, I know.
It's tough, and you need to take personal stock. And, you know, you need to start just like a company does, which it takes inventory. You need to take personal inventory on the individual side. And I think people need, Richard, to go more to their strengths instead of trying to patchwork quilt their weaknesses. I call it going to the sound of the bugles. Sure, it's a strength to know your weaknesses, but you know what? It's even a bigger strength to know your strengths. So perhaps Lao Tzu said it best when he said, "He who knows himself is wise." But a lot of people out there are not tapping their talents.
When we begin to do that self-assessment, as you say, it's hard to do. What is the biggest hurdle, and how do we get over that biggest hurdle?
I think the biggest hurdle is to be candid and honest with yourself. And again, it's real easy to hone in on who your company is, but when you, again, take personal stock, we're not used to that. So we have to understand that we need to do some personal brand building here. For instance, you're in charge of your own brand. Okay, it's not Nike, it's not Gillette, it's not even Apple, but you're in charge of a very important brand called Me, Inc. And when you build a personal brand, Richard, I think you're in essence creating kind of a pulpit for who you are and what makes you unique that creates value to others.
As we go through assess the market, and I would assume that that takes on many different perspectives, not just determining, who is out there, but what it is that you have to offer and who it is that wants what you have to offer.
Well, that's right. All of us have uniquenesses, but again, we have to define, you know, what our gift is to the outside world. So when we talk about assessing the market on the business side, we're looking at competitive strengths and weaknesses. And I think we covered that. Again, a lot of people being concerned too much about weaknesses and not enough about honing in on their strengths. I mean, if you're 24 years old, you can't add, subtract, or multiply, you ought to think twice about being an accountant. Maybe you should think about becoming a world-class chef.
Mm-hmm. Do you find as you travel about in meeting people in your work, what would you say is the percentage of people that know what their purpose is and then are actually living it, are working it, are doing it?
Well, as I mentioned, I don't know if I would agree that 94% of the world out there doesn't know what its purpose is, but it's a high number. It's probably over 80. And yet there are a lot of people that you can look at that seem to combine money and meaning. I mean, Steven Spielberg comes to mind. I mean, you know, he makes a lot of money, but he also makes a lot of meaning. In his movie Saving Private Ryan, he reconnected me with my World War II dad. I think Oprah Winfrey makes a lot of money, but she sure as heck makes a lot of meaning. And, you know, she teaches people to reach out and go for their dreams, and she also suggests we should read a lot. So there's a lot of people out there that seem to be able to take what they do and kick it up, as Emerald would say, to a higher level. In a strange way, that's what I'm doing myself. I use the 12-point marketing discipline, the process we're talking about, to make money for companies, but now I'm using it to make meaning for others in my book. And, oh, by the way, since I'm on the same journey as the reader, I'm also doing it for myself.
You also are wanting to have people certainly check out the material, the information, not only in the book, but there is also a website that people can go to?
Yeah, the website is www.marketingplanforlife.com. One word, drop the www.marketingplanforlife.com.
Okay. Basically, almost the entire title of the book,
right.
marketingplanforlife.com. And certainly the book is available, of course, at Amazon, your local bookstores, and so forth, and at the website as well. And people can get further information about this particular program. You travel extensively?
Yes, I travel the world in my job. I'm presently the global marketing vice president of a big conglomerate in China.
And China is a growing market that has a lot of people both excited and a little bit concerned at its impact as a consuming nation as well as a producing nation. I mean, certainly we've been getting a lot of products for many, many years from China. And a lot of people in this country are very concerned about that. And, of course, they have maybe, I don't know, maybe they have good cause. What can you tell us as far as how China's purpose, if you will, as a nation, let alone its individual, its people as individuals, how that's going to play with the folks here in the United States and that interaction with their job and their purpose?
Well, not being a politician, but just giving you my own viewpoint here, I would say that China in many ways is mirroring what happened in Japan in the 60s. When Japan first came out with their products and services, everybody would laugh and say, made in Japan, ha, ha, ha. And now look at where we're driving. We're driving Lexuses and all sorts of fancy high-end cars and fabulous Japanese brands. China is sort of in that position now in that, you know, made in China isn't that funny anymore. And they're making good products, but what they're lacking is they don't have a major Chinese brand yet. So look for that in the future. As we have many now Japanese brands like Sony and Hitachi and Toyota and Nissan. Look for brands in the future to come out from China. And, of course, the biggest difference between China and Japan, one of the biggest differences is sheer numbers. I mean, 1.3 billion people in China. That's about one out of every five people in the world are from China.
And that's rather astounding. And as I said, there are many people that are excited, and there are also many people that are concerned about its China's impact on the global marketplace and how we are going to move forward. Now, that actually raises an interesting question as far as the United States and our purpose in the global market and our participation in the global community, and it has changed over the years. Am I wrong in my sense that the United States is having trouble assimilating in that sense and moving to its next level? Because obviously we're not producing the things that we did 50 or 100 years ago. I mean, our role keeps changing. We go from one revolution to the next.
That's a great point, Richard. In my opinion, you know, we don't make a lot of stuff anymore. We don't make a lot of hard goods, but we sure know how to make software. We're still the world purveyor in ideas and marketing and software. And I can tell you that the Chinese really seek out our marketing expertise, as did the Japanese. And so we're very good in marketing, and we're extremely good in software. And I think information is ruling the world right now.
Information, I've often heard that it is the ultimate commodity because information is power, as that saying goes. Is that really, really true?
Well, in my opinion, information is powerful, but the misuse of it is equally powerful. And I think it's not just the fact that we can push information around, it's how we make it palatable so we can make some sense of it. I mean, let's face it, we live in a satellite world. We've got emails and we got cell phones and we got all this information coming at us. And, you know, history is moving quicker than we have a chance to take a step back and wonder what happened.
We do need to take a step back. That's really what you're saying, too, not only as assessing our own lives, but, you know, even our role in this country and our communities and so forth. Let's talk a little bit about the steps and how we get from where we are to where we want to be. Now, there are the 12 steps that we've been talking about. We've gone through two or three of them. Identify the target market, launch your strategy, weather the product cycles. And there's one that, I mean, I'm taking a look at my own industry broadcasting and seeing how things are changing, whereas I still have a metal splicing block, razor blade and splicing tape, and I actually have used that for little projects that I've done for people in terms of archival work. But that is even going to go by the wayside because everything is going digital. Everything's going to the disc or, you know, almost to the invisible. And so the product is still sort of the same, but the medium is constantly changing. Well, that means that whoever produces the old medium either goes out of business or shifts and moves forward into the new. Is that what one of the aspects of looking at weathering the product cycle is the technological improvements and changes that we have to look at and sort of try to forecast or predict?
Well, I think you're making a great point here. I mean, I just went today and tried to find I have an old videotape machine that I'm very fond of, and you go to Blockbuster now, and you know, all they have is DVDs. So, I mean, that's how quickly it moves. Seems like only yesterday we were using videotapes. But getting back to product cycles, just as a company has product cycles, and I think you gave a good example of that, we as individuals have life cycles. For instance, a drug company has to continually layer on a flow of proprietary products, knowing that someday they'll become generics. So people like companies are in a constant state of evolution. We need to continually layer on new things and reinvent ourselves. And love them or hate them, Arnold Schwarzenegger has a wonderful ability to transform himself from, you know, by brick from glorious brick. I mean, think about it. He came over here from Austria as a penniless immigrant, okay? Then he became Mr. Universe. Then he became an action film star. Then he was lucky enough to marry into the Kennedy clan. And now he's governor of the state of California, arguably the biggest, the fifth biggest economy in the world. So we reinvent ourselves, Richard, when we adapt to life's changes, the turning points and defining moments. And remember, as long as we have life, as long as we have a pulse, our story is still unfolding.
Hit your four communication keys. What are those keys?
Well, you're talking about the name itself, the product, the service, and the way you market. And, you know, again, we talked earlier about personal brand building. You know, and the fact that you're in charge of your own brand. And those four communications keys are basically personal brand building on the personal side. It's a litmus test as to whether you've got a good thing going or not.
How does one do all of this with the number of hours in the day that we have? We need some time to rest. Obviously, we've made the time to work. We need the time to clean up and to do the various things that we want to do, to recreate, to vacation, to exercise, to eat. It just doesn't seem like there are enough hours in the day to do all of these things and then add all of this, these 12 steps, to that process.
Well, you're quite right, but now you're on one of my favorite subjects. It's time management. It's a big issue, as you've already articulated, for most people. So how do you find enough time to work on your marketing plan for life? Well, you start by asking busy people, because busy people, Richard, always seem to make time for the important things in their life. But the key is to define and take action on what really matters most, and not to just spend your time, but to invest your time wisely on that which is most important to you. In other words, spend time on your A priorities, not all the B's and C's. And I think to really understand time, we need to go back to the ancient Greeks. They thought there were two types of time. Chronos time, meaning chronological time, time which just marches on, no 1 minute, no 1 hour, no more, one more day is any more important than the other. Straight, linear time. Then there's Kairos time. I'll spell it. Kairos. This is quality time. This is time to be experienced, time to be savored. It's meaningful time, time not spent, but invested on what really matters most. But that comes full circle around. You have to take the time to define what really matters most to you. You know, we all have the same 24 hours in a day. You know, the same 24 hours, by the way, that Michelangelo had, Einstein had, and Steven Spielberg has. It's up to us to decide what we're going to do with those hours and make each day count.
You also have one of the steps here, expand your reach, build a high-impact advertising campaign, plan your distribution, and certainly all of these are geared towards business. I certainly am interested in perusing these and getting more information, but there's another aspect too, you know, not just in terms of the issue you talked about time management, but about energy management in terms of our own personal energies. It's like, and maybe that goes hand in hand with time management.
It sure does. I mean, basically, you know, we just finished the Academy Awards, and I think we were supposed to vote for the top three speeches ever given in the Academy Awards upon accepting the Oscar. Well, I've got one for you and your listeners. In terms of time management, it's a real good idea to spend quality time with quality people who encourage you to realize your goals, your dreams, and your aspirations. And upon accepting her Academy Award for Best Actress, Jodie Foster held up her statuette and said, "This is for my mother, who told me that my finger paintings on the fridge were really Picasso's." And she exited stage left. That would have gotten my vote.
Hmm. Well, it's short and sweet, and certainly doesn't raise the ire of the orchestra pit.
Great, you are.
If you've just joined us, we're talking with Robert Fried, and he is the author of A Marketing Plan for Life, 12 Essential Business Principles to Create Meaning, Happiness, and True Success. Turn your life into your most successful business venture, and you can certainly go to his website, and I'm going to give that to you in just a moment as we continue talking here, www.marketingplanforlife.com, all one word, as we are now doing in the 21st century. I actually saw somebody print out a 3 or 4 page single-spaced text, and you had to really read it hard in order to read it, because it was all one word, line after line after line. And if you put the spaces in, yeah, it said something, but it was all one word nonetheless. Let's talk a little bit about achieving your sales goals, analyzing the profit and loss, and establishing the targets of opportunity. And, you know, those are the last three steps that we are talking about here in terms of this marketing plan for life. Can we put it more less in terms of business and more in terms of the personal life in these contexts?
Sure. Let's take that hitting your sales goals. I mean, we have no trouble, whether we're in sales or in any other profession, in articulating what our goals are. But when it comes to our personal life, well, that becomes a bigger challenge. That becomes a horse of a different color. And I'll tell you why it's tough to do personal goals. In my opinion, most people, Richard, don't know the difference. And it surprises me that they don't know the difference between an objective and a goal. So bear with me. I'll make it come alive for you.
Okay.
An objective is general in nature. For instance, an objective would be, I'd like to lose weight. But a goal is always, always, always quantifiable. It's got time. It's got numbers attached to it. So keeping it within the weight vernacular, if an objective is, I'd like to lose weight, a goal is, I'd like to lose 14 pounds over the next 12 months and keep that weight off forever through a good diet and exercise program. So think of goals as dreams with deadlines attached to them, because vague goals produce vague results. So most people don't take the time on the personal side to really write down their goals. I mean, imagine if you were in sales and you went to your sales manager and said, I'd like to get my sales up this year. Duh. I mean, he's going to say, yeah, by when and by how much? So we have to learn how to set personal goals. So that's very, very important.
As an individual were to pick up this book, they would be able to read it and fill out the lines as information is requested in terms of the self-assessment, which you do have in the first part of the book, and go through and ask the questions. I'm going through right now. You've got different exercises for self-discovery. What really matters most? What is your purpose? And what are your passions? And I can see where question A and C would be answered relatively easily, but B, probably a little more difficulty, because if one has not been sort of clued in or tapped in, if you will, to their to that part of themselves, that one's going to be a more difficult one to answer.
You're talking about purpose or passion here?
A purpose.
Yes. Again, 94% of the survey said they had no idea what their purpose was, but you know, I think it's been said the purpose of life is a life of purpose. And you have to take the time to ask yourself some courageous questions. For instance, for myself, I had to ask myself, what gives me joy? Was it closing a big business deal and making a lot of money? And I realized that, no, it wasn't so much closing the deal. It was the challenge to close the deal with a group of people around me and to be part of a group that did something they didn't think they could do. So my purpose in life became not so much selling a bunch of stuff, you know, etching on my tombstone, he sold a lot of stuff, but basically he helped inspire and motivate others to achieve their goals, dreams, and aspirations. So you have to take the time to look inside you and to discover and then take action on your true purpose in life. Because when you align your purpose with your passion, it equals happiness.
And happiness, I guess, too, does not necessarily equate to success, and yet a lot of people will make that connection. I'm not saying that it can't, but is success, are success and happiness somewhat mutually exclusive in
one
sense?
Well, you're making a great point here. Earlier you said maybe we need to take a step back. Well, I think success and monetary achievement, I mean, let's face it, Richard, it's always been an important part of the American way of life. It's part of our fabric. But now in these turbulent times, I think we need to take a step back and wonder if we haven't defined success far too narrowly for far too long. Because even in business circles, it's not just about making money. It's also about making meaning. Mm-hmm. And again, true success always involves others. You know, the USA is often referred to as the United States of anxiety, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you think about it, we're among the best fed and the highest paid people in the world, but we're not in the top 10 when it comes to happiness.
This is true, and we do have a lot of stuff. I can attest to the fact that my wife and I have a lot of stuff in our garage. We all do. We have storage sheds here and there. I'm not saying I do, or my wife, but people, we in general. We spend, I don't know what the per capita expense is for storage units around the country, but I know that they're full.
It's a great investment, and I think to truly understand happiness, and you brought it up here, I think we have to understand the concept of enoughness, mm-hmm. because it's a paradox when you think about it, because we often judge ourselves, don't we, in comparison to others, and simply put, having more isn't enough unless somebody else has less, and this syndrome is commonly called and referred to as keeping up with the Joneses.
Yeah. And therein lies another paradox in terms of a marketing plan for life and when you apply it to business, and that is in, well, my purpose is to create this thing, this product, which you could put under the category of stuff. Yeah, I could certainly sell it, and I could convince people that it's important and they need it. We can look at the television and we can see all of the various products. And I have to tell you that I don't know whether it's because I've become jaded, I've become disinterested in what they have to offer, because everybody wants my money. I mean, my money is stretched thin just like everybody else's, and here are these people wanting more of it, and I don't have any more. And I look at the product that they have to offer, and I say, well, that would be nice, but do I really need that? Do I really want it? And yet I still am bombarded by all of these commercials, all of these advertisements, everywhere I turn, television, and I work in radio, and I'm producing commercials. And,
right.
And it, you know, you start questioning your own, the word that I want to say is ethics. You know, it's like, okay, I don't want to create a bunch more stuff, but my business is to create a bunch more stuff.
Well, you're making a good point here, and of course what I'm saying, I don't think we should make our life as a business, but I think we should make it, here's a play on words here, our business to take care of our life,
mm-hmm.
by reapplying some of the same disciplines that we use to be successful in your radio career and maybe a teacher, and applying it back to having the same type of success, which always involves others, in our personal life.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we need to be entrepreneurs, if you will, of our own existence. And I think a lot of the answers lie in the time we spent, the 90% of the time we spent on our careers.
Yeah. If you've just joined us, my guest is the author of A Marketing Plan for Life, Robert Fried. And www.marketingplanforlife.com is the website. That's marketingplanforlife.com. Turn your life into your most successful business venture. 12 essential business principles to create meaning, happiness, and true success. And Robert, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Richard.
I appreciate it, and I thank you for joining us. And we hope that you will stay with us here on the program.